Okay. So we're going to keep marching through chapter 4. We're going to talk about, at a high level, a section in the that the book talks about. I don't like how they name it in the book, because it will confuse with some controls terminology, but we'll follow it. For now, at least. Section 4.6. So, the title of the section and how he discusses this section is Zeros in a Forced Response. What the book means in this case is, zero magnitude response at a given frequency input. Who remembers what zeros means in controls terminology? You have poles and you have, what are the poles? Given a transfer function, what are the poles? If I have a transfer function, let's do controls. What are the poles of that transfer function? Where what's zero? Okay, so where the numerator is zero, those are the zeros. Where the denominator is zero are the poles of the transfer function. And we saw that if you plot, you should hopefully at least have seen this, if you plot the poles on an imaginary axis, right, you get a lot of information about the response of the system. Right, that's the whole purpose of the root locus, for example. I plot that pole location, and I can know from those poles, that's omega n, that height's omega d, this distance here, zeta omega n. And then you can plot the zeros. We'll have one zero maybe over there. And then from that, I can draw the root locus and know what's going on with the system. In this case, this guy would be something like that. So, that's why I don't like zeros. Because zeros means zeros on a pole zero map to me. But that's an aside. Hopefully that pole zero mapping looked at least familiar from whenever you took controls. What we're talking about is, in this case, I'm going to take M1, 2, M3, and let's do one more. Four. And each is described from its equilibrium position by x, 1, 2, 4. So we have this string of masses connected by springs. And we'll call the springs K1 to K5. K1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And we'll just consider the undamped case for now. And we have some forcing function on that first mass. Okay. So we kind of ask, a question, and there's kind of two different ways we maybe can ask that. So for, you know, maybe assuming f of t is a pure harmonic at some given frequency, can we choose k2, k3, k4, k5, m2, m3, m4, such that x1 remains stationary? Or, to put it another way, is there some frequency of this pure harmonic input at which x1 stays stationary for a given selection of k2 to 5 and m2 to 4? Really the same question, just kind of approaching it from a different direction. What do you guys think? Excuse me. I see some nods, yes. Hopefully this, what we did last lecture on the vibration absorber has convinced you there's probably something out there that, where this would work. Okay. Well, let's kind of convince ourselves of that. Okay. Let's look at M1. What forces are acting on M1? Well, we have the applied force, right? And then we have the spring force, which in this case has magnitude K1, X1 in the negative direction. Okay. And then I have this other spring force, on that side. So given those forces, what I'm trying to figure out is, hey, is there anything, any setup here that M1 can remain stationary? So what we're going to do for our discussion is, yeah, assume that's true, and then see if the math works out to support that assumption being true. Right? Can we get to math that works that supports this thing being true? It's a common path we take in all kinds of derivations, right? Assume what we want to be true, and then does the math work out once you make that assumption? Okay. So in this case, we're going to assume that x1 is fixed. So let's fix x1. Okay. Just assuming, making that assumption. Assume that for now. Well, that means this spring force goes away, right? Okay. And that means, well, the x1 part over there goes away. So in this case, we're to the case, basically, of the vibration absorber we talked about last week, right? Where the spring force from X2's motion, from X2's motion has to balance exactly the force from the input. And there's no reason that can't be true so far. And what we'll find, and actually, I'll leave the derivation for you to figure out, or to look at the book for. But basically, in this case, okay, if I look at this subsystem, and this is, think about this being my vibration absorber for this particular original M1 system, how many degrees of freedom are left over for me? 3. So what actually happens is I have actually 3 different frequencies at which this happens for me. And again, the derivation, full derivation is in the book. I don't think it's necessarily worth our time. Okay. But basically, you can kind of think about, well, the kind of all the forces over here add up, get propagated through M2's motion, and exactly cancel the motion of F. Okay. That's kind of the easy case, I think. That's just an extension of what we did last week. Right. Let's modify this a little bit. So then the question is, given f of t still on M1, are there any frequencies at which M2 is stationary? What do you guys think? I heard one, sure. Confident, sure, it sounded like. What do you think? Well, what has to happen? Let's look at the forces. The net forces on M2 have to be zero for it to stay stationary for all time, right? Well, in this case, what forces do I have on M2? I have K2. X1's bigger than X2. It's positive in that direction. Okay. Maybe I can draw this one this way. Okay. So, two forces on that guy, right? We can do the same trick. Let's assume what we want to be true is true and see if the math works out for us. All right. So let's fix it. Well, that means this guy goes to zero. That guy's going to zero. Is there any reason for us at this point to think that K1 X1 can't cancel K3 X3? No, so in the general case, there's nothing telling us this can't work. And indeed, it does work. Okay. And in fact, we see we have kind of 2 degrees of freedom left over here. So there are 2 different frequencies that work for us in this particular case. Okay. What do you guys think for M3? Can we do the same thing for M3? Force is still back over here on M1. Is there some frequency of F of T for which M3 is not moving? You would think, hey, maybe it balances out the same way. Let's take a look. That ends up being K3. All right, just have 2 spring forces there. All right. Do the same thing. Assume it's fixed. Okay, if X3 is fixed, well, that term goes to zero, that guy goes to zero, we still have forces on either side that we don't have any reason not to believe they're not going to cancel. Okay. What about M4? Is there any frequency here in F of T for which M4 can be stationary? Why not?
Because you can't cancel out like when you have the X4.
Right. So in this case, spring force I have over here is K5 X4. Right. And the spring force I have on this side if I assume that it's fixed. Like we did before. Well, this guy goes to zero. That guy's zero, but I still have a force over here. So there's no way for me to have net force on that last mass and this particular string of masses, the particular system. Okay. So no frequency for that at which that's stationary, or no way for us to choose, if we're kind of approaching it from the other way, any kind of appropriate K2, K3, K4, K5, M2 to M4 to make M4 stationary. Okay. So the kind of key point to this, and why I think it's useful to think about it a little bit, right, even at a really high level like we just did, is the farther we got away. So if you think about this from a controls perspective, right? I want to keep any of these stationary. That's like a controls problem. I don't want M4 vibrating, let's say. Okay? I'm trying to control that vibration in some way. Or I don't want M2 to vibrate, this node of my system. That's a controls problem, largely. But this vibrations analysis, very simple, high level, tells us that the farther away whatever we want to control is from where I actually can affect the system with my control input, the harder it is to control. And in some cases, it's impossible to control. In this case, no matter what I do with F of T, I can't make this guy sit perfectly still for all time. Right? I can do that for these other ones. And I can do that at three different frequencies for M1. Right? So this is an idea that comes up a lot in control systems. It's called co-located and non-co-located control. So co-located, they're located at the same place. My input is exactly at what I want to control. Or my measurements also are exactly at what I want to control. I can measure exactly what I want to control. I can affect its motion directly. It's co-located control. Okay. Non-co-located control. I want to control something over here that's kind of somehow distant. It's not at the same location to where I actually can affect its motion. Okay. So the book, I think he uses fly fishing maybe. You have to control the tip of your rod, but your input's actually way down at the handle, right? Golf is another one. You have to control the club face, but you're way up at the handle. That's one reason golf is hard. Way harder than it seems. Should be, right? So I'm controlling something far away from what I actually want to control. Right? So co-located systems are better, is the point here. All right, if you're going to sense and affect something near what you want to actually control, that's better. It's really a key point in controls, and that's why I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about it. Okay. Let's look at one more case of this, given what we just talked about, and you tell me what you think. Or how you would even approach getting to an answer, maybe, if you don't see the answer. Move that guy over. What do you think now? Which of these masses can I make stationary? 2 and 3. Why is that? Yes, the only ones I still have. I'm able to cancel out those extra. That's right. So if you're trying to control M2, this is still probably better. And actually in M2, I get still three different frequencies now because I'm co-located. I can cancel forces on both sides. Yes, sir.
Is it possible to control 2 and 3 at the same time and 1 and 4 absorb the rest of the vibration?
Let's see. With a pure harmonic, you're not going to be able to get 0 exactly. And actually, if you look at the book, I'm not going to draw them up. I don't think it's worth the time. There's frequency response plots of this where you can see where those zeros happen. You may be able to, with non-pure harmonic in F, do something close to 0. I don't think you're going to be able to get exactly 0. So M2, if I move the force over to M3, it's really just the flip case, right? Move the force over to M4, it's just the mirror of what we did to start with. Right. So the point of all this, you want to be able to measure and force and control what you want to actually control, if at all possible. It's not always possible. Controlling a crane, this is another non-co-located control. I want to control the crane payload. What I actually have control over is the crane trolley that's 5 to 50 meters away.